I'm Dr. Pam Peake, and welcome to episode 253, little sweat coming off my forehead with that one, of Her, the podcast where you're going to hear the naked truth about her mind, her body, her life, and her dating in the time of COVID. Uh-oh. See, I knew it. You're grabbing all your pens and your computers and your iPad. You're going to take notes. I know you are, because this is going to be a terrific show, and it's made possible by our wonderful friends at Smarty Pants Women's Vitamins, the delicious once-a-day gummies that contain all of the essential vitamins, minerals, and omega oils customized just for women. To learn more, hop on over to SmartyPantsVitamins.com. Okie dokie, here's your first official reminder to click on iTunes after this episode to rate and review the show, because I love hearing from you and my team just loves your feedback. We're going to give you another reminder toward the end of the show, so just keep that in mind.
Her, the podcast.
The naked truth about women.
Her mind, her body, her life. It's all about her.
All right, it's time for Her. All right, we've got COVID viruses floating all over the place. This is turning into a royal mess. And what if you're somebody out there who wants to engage in the dating game? What? In the time of COVID? How in the hell do you do that? All right, I knew I'd capture your attention. Well, who better to talk about this than, what can I say, Dr. Helen Fisher. If you don't know about her work, you're a loser, because she has written some of the best books on the planet about this. Like, for instance, Why We Love, Why Him, Why Her? And, of course, The Anatomy of Love, which is just a seminal text, and it's already in its second edition. And you know her as a biological anthropologist, senior research fellow at the Kinsey Institute, and, chief science advisor to Match.com. What does that tell you? She has intel. That's right. She's a scientist who uses brain scanning, these are functional MRIs, to study the neural systems associated with the sex drive, romantic love, attachment, rejection, love addiction, and long-term partnership happiness. Helen, welcome back to the Her Podcast.
Well, thank you very much. I'm delighted to be with you again.
All right, so here I am reading the New York Times, you know how it goes, and what do I see that captures my attention? A headline, of course, how coronavirus is changing the dating game for the better. And then I said to myself, that's got to be written by, and sure to form, Helen Fisher. This was a fabulous feature. I'm not even kidding you. And it is so rich. We could go on forever talking about everything that you brought up here. Why did you decide to write this?
I just thought that, I mean, doom and gloom was just all around us. And I honestly really did see that there was some great opportunities here during this pandemic to find the right person. And so it just led me to, in fact, I wrote to somebody at the New York Times. I generally don't do that. I wait for people to write me. But I wrote her and I said, I really got something positive to say. And she said, well, then say it. Let's have it. So that's what happened.
I just think it's just absolutely one of the best pieces. This came out May 7th. So it was very recent, and everyone out there should read it. It's really excellent. So you've been the chief science advisor to Match.com for 15 years. Oh, man, I bet you have some interesting things to say about life.
I have
in
gone
general.
Through seven presidents. I think I'm the oldest. I mean, I'm the longest, you know, participant in that particular enterprise than anybody on the planet.
Oh, my gosh.
But it's very interesting. I mean, they're very earnest. I mean, I'm not being paid to say this, but they're very earnest about trying to match people. I mean, I've sat into a lot of their... I mean, I'm a consultant. I do their science. And, of course, it's great for me because, I mean, in one of my questionnaires, I've got data on over 14 million people. I mean, you can't get that kind of data in academia. And it's been very valuable. I now do a study with them that we've got data on 45,000 singles in America. It's called Singles in America. We do not poll the match members. This is a national representative sample of Americans based on the U.S. Census. So it's a beautiful experience for me to work with a company that lets me do just what I want to do and collect information about who you are, what you do, what you want in love, et cetera, et cetera.
All right. Now, you said the pandemic, this COVID-19 pandemic, is actually changing the courtship process in some positive ways. Now, yes. Just dive in. Come on, let's talk about this.
Absolutely. Well, it began to occur to me, we are mammals. I mean, we do want to go out and meet people, and we will go, we'll get back to doing that. I mean, we really were not built for 24/7 with somebody or 24/7 just in the home. I mean, you know, I'm an anthropologist, and for millions of years, we lived in these little hunting and gathering groups, and men went off hunting every day, well, 4 days a week anyway, and sometimes stayed out two or three nights, and women went gathering and went and saw friends and family for maybe 2 weeks. So basically, we are not built for this, but I began to see some of the opportunities that were available, and there's about five things. Number one, these days, singles have time to talk. I mean, even if you're working at home, you know, you're not getting dressed for work, you're not commuting to work, you're not meeting friends after work, you have time to date. And you also have something to talk about. You know, a lot of first dates are really just chit-chat. But now we've got something very meaningful to talk about. I mean, people are getting right into their hopes, their disappointments, their dreams, how they're handling it. And this self-disclosure, psychologists show that self-disclosure really triggers feelings of intimacy and commitment to people. So they got time to talk. They got something to talk about. It's escalating this need for self-disclosure and creating more intimacy. But there's other things, too. I mean, you know, sex is off the table. I mean, you know, when you go out and meet somebody in person for the first time, you got to decide, I mean, am I going to kiss him? Am I going to kiss her? Should I hold their hands? Should I walk them home? I mean, how do I handle it? Off the table. Sex is off the table. And so is money. I mean, you don't have to decide, well, do we go to a cheap cafe and have just a coffee, or do we go to a fancy bar and spend more money, and who's supposed to pay? Do I offer to split the bill? Gone. Sex is off the table. Money is off the table. You got time to talk. You got something to talk about. And probably the very best thing, and we're really lucky in this, we've got things like FaceTime and Skype and Zoom and ways to really talk to somebody face-to-face. Okay, we're in quarantine, but face-to-face on the internet. So I honestly think there's a new stage in the courtship process that is developing. You know, prior to the pandemic, I mean, people met on the internet, and that's all these services are, is introducing services. They're not dating services. They're introducing services. But in the past, people, you know, they met online, and then they went out and met in person. Now they're meeting online, then they're doing this video chatting online before they meet in person. And I think it's a new stage in the courtship process. It's a new selection. I mean, a lot of people will be selected out at that time before they meet. So that's going to save singles time and money. But also, by the time they do meet, they've had enough conversations with these people so that they actually know, geez, I would like to kiss him, or I would like to kiss her, and, oh, gee, let's go to a fancier place. I'd like to spend my money. I spent several hours talking to this person on the internet, and so I do think that there will be fewer first dates in person when this is over, but those dates are going to be much more meaningful. And in fact, as this stage emerges during the pandemic, it will remain that more and more people really will want to do the video chatting on the internet before they get out in person. And so in some respects, we're going back to Jane Austen's days. I mean, it's more traditional to have some conversation and get to know somebody before the kissing starts. And we're seeing that stage emerge.
Oh, I just absolutely love that part. And, you know, you make a note about, well, you know, I guess I was astounded by a couple of pieces of information here in this New York Times piece that you wrote, that Match itself, Match.com, had asked members several questions about how they've changed their courtship habits. And over 6,000 men and women replied, which was amazing. And,
I know it's crazy.
It's crazy. Well, I'm a physician and a scientist. And so when I get a cohort that's already in four figures in 2 days, I mean, I'm falling on my knees, you know, like manna from heaven, like, good Lord. Well, here's what's interesting. I didn't know this. you know, the video chatting before COVID-19, only 6% of these singles were using video chatting to court. Now over 69% are open to it. Whoa.
Yeah.
So that's really changed that. The other thing that I thought was fascinating.
Yeah.
Well, so people are now looking at, based upon your research and, you know, and the research done on specific brain regions that respond almost instantly to assess things about a likely mate, it's personality and physical appeal. Tell us how that works.
It was a fascinating article, and I can't remember the details of the brain regions that are involved, but instantly, when you look at somebody, you begin to size them up. I mean, that's from a Darwinian perspective. That's adaptive. I mean, you know, I mean, we're trying to, I mean, singles are looking for life's greatest prize, which is a mating partner. They plan for love, they live for love, they kill for love, and they die for love. I mean, this is a serious game that people are playing, and the brain is built with a series of brain regions that get activated almost instantly, and you're basically assessing, do I find this person physically attractive enough? And are they mentally stable enough? As a matter of fact, part of that article that I didn't get in there is I did a study with Match. I was in the Singles in America study. And I asked, what are the first three things that you notice about a person when you're interacting with them? And the first three things, and there's 5,000 people, it's a large sample. The first three things is their teeth, their grammar, and their self-confidence. And what is that? Teeth tell immediately about your age and your health. Grammar talks about your background and your education. And self-confidence talks about your mental stability. And so the brain is very rapidly trying to figure out, is this a good match? And as well it should be, because you make mistakes and you have babies that are somehow, you know, not viable, you will have expended a lot of time and energy. So anyway, yes, the brain is very well built to size people up. We do it all the time. And you can do it on the internet. I mean, you know, we're walking billboards of who we really are. And even on the internet, you can see whether he's wearing a preppy shirt or has tattoos on his neck and what his haircut is like and whether her blouse is down to her waist or whether it's buttoned up to her ears. You know, and you certainly hear people's grammar and you see them smiling and see their teeth, and then they respond to this COVID issue and this mess that we're in. I love the way you said that. And it really is a mess, as we all know. But anyway, the bottom line is the brain is built to do this.
Well, I'm just sort of smiling here, Helen, because how do you find the teeth thing when you got a mask on?
Yeah, right. But of course, they're not going to be having the mask on when they're on the internet.
I know, seriously.
But once they get out there, you know what I think is going to happen?
Yeah,
tell
me.
I honestly think we're going to start having speakeasies. I think that people
really?
Are not going to. I really do. The human animal is not built for this. And I think that after several hours, let's say you're talking, I mean, we've been cooped up here, what, for 7 weeks? Let's say you're talking to somebody almost every day, maybe 2 or 3 hours. You know who they are. You know that they've had the test, that they are negative, that everybody in their family is probably negative, and you're gonna take a chance. Some people are gonna follow the rules. I mean, I study the biology of personality, and some people are much more cautious than others. But even the cautious ones, you know, once that brain circuitry for romantic love kicks in, people throw caution to the wind. I mean, this is a basic brain system way at the bottom of the brain. It's a drive. It's a basic mating drive. And what people will do to find love is out of this world. And I really do think that they're going to have these long conversations on the internet, on Skype or Zoom or FaceTime or whatever. They're going to get to know each other. They're going to go out maybe 2 or 3 times. They'll hold hands with gloves on and kiss the side of each face with a mask on. But they're going to take those masks off.
I love it. You know, I just have to tell you, you know, I think women are going to be doing, like, I was reading something about the makeup choices now that women are going to have.
All eyes.
it's all eyes. It's all eyes are on you. And suddenly, you know, your red lipstick's getting all smudged in there in the mask, and the whole thing just becomes kind of crazy one way or the other.
Yeah.
But it's interesting. Now, there was a rule of nine that you talked about in the article. Tell us about that.
You know, yes, I'd love to. It's called the paradox of choice or cognitive overload. And what scientists have discovered, they've been looking at how we choose for decades, and they've now found that the brain is just not well built to really assemble and cope with more than about 9 choices. It's between 5 and 9 choices. The brain is sort of built, to choose pretty easily between about 5 and 9 choices. And then it begins to just get blurred. You can't remember who the people are, what they said. Even if you take notes, you can't remember what they look like, et cetera, et cetera. I mean, for millions of years in these little hunting and gathering groups, you never met more than about 9 possible opportunities in the course of your whole life. And so that's the way the brain is built. And, you know, there's nothing wrong with the internet. The problem is it's so new that we don't know how to use it. And so we swipe, 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 swipe. And after a while, it just turns into, a blitz. I mean, it's just, you know, you choose none. And so one of the things, there's 2 things that I say, if you're going to use the internet, number one, after you've met 9 people, and I mean even met by Zoom or Spacetime, but seen, not just emailed or talked on the phone, but seen in one way or another 9 people, stop and get off the dating site and get to know at least one of those people better. The more you get to know somebody, the more you like them, and the more you think that they're like you. So that's number one. Don't binge on these dating sites. Stop the binge. Stop after 9 people and get to know one better. Second thing is, think of reasons to say yes. You know, there's a huge brain region, and I've studied it myself, linked with what scientists call negativity bias. We are built to remember the negative for good evolutionary reasons. I mean, it's nice to remember who likes you, but if you forget who hates you, you could die. So the brain is built to remember the negative. And so, okay, you get on the internet with somebody, and he likes cats and you like dogs. Forget about it. Focus on what you do like about the person. Think of reasons to say yes. Unless it's so obvious that it's, you know, that it's out of the question, get off the internet after you've met 9 people, get to know at least one of them better, and think of the positive instead of the negative.
You know, I love that. And I had read that one of the key elements you want to think about when you're scoping out a potential partner is not so much what you have that's dissimilar, but whether or not, now clearly it'd be nice to have a goodly number of things that are similar, philosophy right. And life and things like that. That's obviously very important. But, you know, here's the big question. I think that there's some fantasy-based assumption that you're supposed to be in lockstep about everything in life. Wrong. And instead, here's the big question. Can you live with something about that person that's not exactly optimal for you? My best example about this is, you know, great, the partner, the potential partner is a fabulous career, really smart person, you know, funny, intellectual, da-da-da. They're always late.
Oh, yeah.
They're just always late. I mean, that's it. Yeah. They just have this
thing.
I've
had a couple of them, boy, did it make me mad.
You know what I'm saying? And you're like, Well, Ken, is that a deal breaker? You have to ask yourself, because if it's not, and if you could live with it, look at all the positive things coming out of this. Is that kind of where you're going?
Yes, it is. And that, you know, you struck on a really important one. I mean, there's all kinds of things that we overlook. What is it? Ruth Bader Ginsburg once said, you know, in a good marriage, it's important to sometimes be a little bit deaf. And, you know, just to overlook things. I find that late one really rude, though. I tell you, I've had 2 men that were just so late all the time. I mean, you really caught a real thread in me. There's all kinds of things that people can overlook. And by the way, you know, before I put these people into the brain scanner, I would ask them what they do not like about their partner. And they could list what they did not like. But then they swept that aside and just absolutely focused on what they did. So, in fact, this brain region linked with negativity bias, activity in that brain region goes down. You begin to naturally overlook the negative. But there's some things that we just can't overlook. And by the way, I mean, compromise is very important in a partnership. And if you really want to build a good partnership, you got to be willing to do some compromises. Finally, both men, I beat them into being on time. I didn't beat them. I never bet anybody. But I'm telling you,
I love it.
I mean, when you got an opera and the tickets are $250 and to sit there and, you know, you got 10 seconds to get into your seat and you're saying, excuse me to everybody and they're all settled in. It's rude. But some people are just temperamentally.
Oh, you know. Helen, have I just hit a little trigger? Oh,
yes,
my goodness.
Did. That's funny. Very first time on any kind of, you know, sharing anything. But anyway, the bottom line is we all have some things we got to overlook.
No
we've
question.
Got to turn, we've got to turn lemons into lemonade. I mean, with my man, there's some things that we really don't agree on, but I really like hearing his opinion. Because it's, you know, I'm a Democrat, and I've always heard about, I mean, I hang around with Democrats, and I don't hear other, now, he's not a Republican, he happens to be a Libertarian, but it's interesting to me to hear other perspectives. It hasn't changed my mind, but it's broadened me. And I do think that an awful lot of these things that can be minor irritants can really turn into something that is useful for you, and even builds a finer partnership, or a better partnership.
I love that. And you know, everyone out there, if you want to be learning more about this, then you really need to read Dr. Helen Fisher's books, Why We Love, Why Him, Why Her. And the other book, of course, is a classic. And it's called The Anatomy of Love. It's already in its second edition. And, you know, the thing that I love about you, Helen, is that you're a scientist, but you're a fabulous communicator. So a lot of this science tends to be a bit dense, especially once we start getting into neurology and a discussion of neural systems. But you do a beautiful job of really articulating how this could really relate to someone's life. You know,
you're
how you can make this
I
actionable.
I really appreciate that. Thank you.
Well, listen, and also everyone out there, go to the TED.com site and just put in Dr. Helen Fisher and watch the TED Talks. It's just ridiculous because she's one of the all-time top viewed TED Talks because it's all things love and the anatomy of love and relationships. And you know something, Helen, I'm going to find every excuse I can to put you back on this show again because this episode, I warned you ahead of time, I could have gone on forever. I was restraining myself. I have clocks all over the place saying, stop. You got another one. But
thank you. I really appreciate that.
Okay, run on over to Helen's website, helenfisher.com, and that's F-I-S-H-E-R. And again, grab the books. And Helen, thank you so much for being on the Her Podcast.
And thank you for having me. It was just absolutely charming.
Wonderful, wonderful. Everyone out there, run over to iTunes right now, rate and review this show because this was so awesome and wonderful. I love it. Why? Because I'm Dr. Pam Peek. I'm host of the Herd Podcast. Follow me on Facebook at Dr. Pam Peek or Twitter at Pam Peek MD. And remember to catch every single episode of the Herd Podcast on iTunes or Radio MD. Thanks for listening today. Now, stay safe and stay well.